Item number three, public hearing order number R1-2007-007 to consider adoption of proposed waste discharge requirements for City of Fortuna Municipal Wastewater Treatment Plant, NPDS permit number CA0022730. And with that, we'll call on a staff presentation. I believe it's Lisa Bernard. Well, we need to, before we do that, we're going to have to swear everybody in that intends to testify. So can everyone who intends to testify please stand and raise your right hand? It would be this item. And to make it easy, because it's hard to keep track of who in the audience, when you get up and give your name and your address, say, "I've been sworn." It makes the process go better. Do you swear or affirm that you'll tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth in this matter?
Yes.
Okay. Let the record note that we heard only affirmatives. This is the time and place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider revisions of a National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit in the matter of the City of Fortuna. This item has been properly noticed. A sheet explaining the procedures for this hearing is available at the handout table. And at this time, we'll start with the staff presentation.
Good morning, board members. I'm Lisa Bernard of your staff, and I'm here today to present to you an item for consideration for renewal of an NPDES permit for the wastewater treatment facility in the City of Fortuna. This item was before you in June, and as you'll recall, we received some highly technical late comments from the city staff, and so we didn't have time to address those comments in the amount of time we had available, and we are bringing this before you today again after having had time to consider those. So the updated permit carries over many of the effluent limitations from the previous permit. It also includes new limitations based on monitoring conducted during the last permit cycle. And this morning I will give you a brief overview of the changes to the permit, as well as the comments we received from the city and our staff responses. And at this time, I'd like to enter the file into the hearing record.
Okay, is there any objection?
Do I have a pointer?
Okay, I'm going to deem the file entered into the hearing record.
Thank you. Okay, this just to orient you really quick, here's the City of Fortuna, and north is at the top of the slide here. We have Highway 101 running north. Eureka is about 15 or 20 minutes to the north, and we have City of Fortuna is immediately adjacent to the Eel River, and it discharges, the Eel River discharges into the ocean not far downstream from that. This is an aerial photo of the city's wastewater treatment facility taken in 2006. And again, on the left, we see the Eel River, and on the right, Highway 101 running north. So the city operates this treatment plant, which serves approximately 11,000 citizens. The current wastewater treatment system provides secondary treatment through a series of processes. And the city has recently undergone major upgrades to their solids handling portion of the facility. They installed an additional clarifier. They have installed solids dewatering and composting operations, as well as an anaerobic sludge digester and extensive odor control. So they've done a lot to upgrade that portion of their facility recently. During the winter season, wastewater can be discharged through .001 to Strong's Creek, approximately right here, along the southern boundary of the facility. And during the dry season, wastewater is discharged to these three percolation ponds adjacent to the Eel River. The facility is currently designed to treat an average dry weather flow of 1.5 million gallons a day. And wintertime flows over 3 million gallons a day are diverted to these equalization ponds. And when flows are reduced, you know, when the storm subsides a little bit, then the water is redirected back through the treatment process. The previous permit allowed discharges from these equalization ponds after being disinfected and dechlorinated directly into Strong's Creek, and the new permit will no longer allow that discharge. This is a picture of the discharge pipe that, or 001 that goes into Strong's Creek. And new limitations and monitoring are being adopted in this permit for this location, including copper limits, chlorine byproducts, dichlorobromomethane, and chlorodibromomethane. These limits are being instituted as a result of sampling that was done in compliance with the California Toxics Rule under the last permit cycle. In addition, routine sampling will be required for the first time in the receiving water, and we have adjusted the acute toxicity sampling frequency from biannual to monthly to be consistent with other dischargers of this size, as well as to better monitor acute toxicity in the effluent. Those toxicity monitoring will only have to occur when discharges are going directly to the creek. So when they're using their land disposal options, they won't have to do that. The permit contains two special studies. The first study is a hydrogeologic study. So here, this depicts the treatment pond, the disposal pond, and here is the Eel River. It's possible, due to the location and the nature of the lithology in this location, that there could be a connectivity hydraulically between the disposal pond and the Eel River, which could be in violation of our prohibition on discharges to surface water in the summertime. So the special study would require that the city either study the hydrology and show that there's no connection, or they could skip that and go directly to an alternatives analysis and try to identify a different summertime disposal method. The second special study is a hydraulic study. Our basin plan requires that all discharges to the Eel River and tributaries to the Eel River, which Strong's Creek is a tributary to the Eel River, discharge at 100-1, or only 1% of the receiving water flow. It's unclear to us at this time whether or not the discharge from the city, which is right here and goes down this little path and into Strong's Creek, it's unclear to us right now whether or not those discharges comply with that basin plan prohibition. So the discharger is being required to conduct a hydraulic study to show that they comply with that, or provide an alternative. And one of the alternatives available to the discharger is our basin plan provides for exceptions to the 100-1 discharge, but several steps have to be followed in order for them to apply for that, and then the board would have to adopt that. Okay. The city submitted late comments that were highly technical, and staff has reviewed these. You'll recall, as I said earlier, that we've rescheduled the board meeting for today. A copy of the comments received, as well as our responses, are attached to your agenda package. And I will give you a brief overview of their comments and our responses. The city's comments fell into two basic categories: relaxation of effluent limitations and toxicity triggers, as well as they would like to conduct special studies and have the ability to reopen the permit based on the results of those studies. So, request for relaxation of effluent limits. The city has requested that instead of using receiving water hardness, the toxicity of copper to aquatic organisms varies depending on the hardness of the water. So, as a result, effluent limitations for copper are hardness dependent. And our state implementation plan requires that we use the hardness of ambient receiving water in order for us to evaluate whether or not, what the copper limitation would be. And the city was requesting that we use the hardness of their effluent as an alternative to that. And we aren't able to make that change because it's inconsistent with the state implementation plan. Calculation of interim limits. Interim limits are discretionary. We don't have to apply interim limits. We could apply final limits, but the city has requested that we give them interim limits for copper and the chlorine byproducts, and staff agreed to do that. We have two data points which the city has provided to us with which to develop limitations. And so staff assigned the very highest limit for each one, or the very highest concentration for copper and each of the chlorine byproducts as the interim limits, and have determined that that represents current treatment plant performance, which is consistent with the state implementation plan requirements. The city also requested that we increase the mass limitations for biological oxygen demand and total suspended solids. The regulations require that the mass limitations be developed based on the design flow of the treatment plant. So what we do is we calculate the mass, we multiply the flow by the concentrations that are required, and that's how we get the mass limit. We have been using 1.5 million gallons, which is also what the city has provided to us in their application. It's also consistent with the same number that was in their last permit. And I evaluated 660 samples for BOD and suspended solids from the last permit cycle. And of those samples, there was only one violation for suspended solids and no violations of the mass limits for BOD. So staff doesn't feel that it's appropriate without some kind of anti-degradation analysis for us to increase that limitation. One more. The trigger of one TUC is toxicity unit for chronic is consistent with the nationwide guidance for US EPA for chronic toxicity. The city has requested that we increase that limitation, or that trigger, it's not a limitation, it's a trigger, to 20 TUC. If that trigger is exceeded, it kicks the discharger into accelerated monitoring. And so they're asking for that to be increased to 20 instead of 1 to account for variability in the testing, since we are using biotic, you know, the organisms in order to do the testing. However, as I said, this is consistent with the US EPA nationwide guidance, and because there is the potential for false positives, that is the purpose of the accelerated monitoring, to repeat the test to ensure that there is indeed toxicity instead of, you know, having a false positive represent the data. A couple other things. This special studies and reopening of the MPDS permit. For alternate discharge rates that are exceeding 1%, the city would like to do a hydraulic study. And as I said before, their alternatives are available for them to investigate, including an exception to that requirement based on the basin plan criteria. The city has also indicated that they would be interested in doing a mixing zone or dilution credit study as a compliance strategy, and there's nothing in the existing permit to prevent them from conducting that type of a study. Alternate permit reopener language. The city has requested that we change our permit reopener language. However, our legal staff has indicated that the existing permit reopener language is sufficient to allow for permit revisions prior to the expiration should significant information presented indicate that such an action is warranted. So after consideration of the city's comments, no significant changes were made to the permit that was before you in June, and staff would recommend that you adopt the proposed permit.
Do board members have questions of staff?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Ms. Bernard, with respect to copper hardness, let me see if I understand it. Copper is hard on fish, correct?
Yes.
And if we look at copper, its toxicity is dependent upon hardness.
Correct.
So if we measure hardness either in the pipe that's delivering the copper, that really doesn't tell you very much about what it'll do to fish, because you're delivering copper into a stream, and it is the stream's hardness that will make the difference in terms of whether copper is toxic to fish or not.
Yes, the environment the fish have to live in is basically
determines the toxicity of the copper.
Correct.
Thank you.
And I had one question. The basin plan is silent on the mixing zones, and I know at one time we were working on a policy development, and we decided not to proceed forward, and you mentioned a study. My interpretation would be that they could come up with a study with a mixing zone without additional generic regulation. Does legal counsel subscribe to that?
Yes, the state implementation policy overrides our basin plan for the California's toxic rule, the priority pollutants, so they are able to come up with a mixing zone study for those priority pollutants.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions by board members?
The staff, somewhere, I apologize, I can't quite put my finger on, there's reference to Grizzly Creek and whether or not it's a discharge point, or I found Strong's Creek in a map, but I haven't found Grizzly anywhere.
I think that probably refers to the upstream USGS monitoring station. There aren't very many monitoring stations where you can actually measure flow in the Eel River, not conveniently located, especially for our purposes. So in order for them to appropriately determine how much flow is in the Eel River, they have to combine the flow from Grizzly Creek, which is an upstream point that contributes to the Eel River, as well as the numbers from the Scotia gauging station. They add those together, and we try to get the best estimate we can for flow in the Eel River at their discharge.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I have one question. The hydraulic analysis for Strong's Creek, will that determine channel capacity for Strong's Creek specifically? Although the basin plan shows a 100-to-1 ratio, is Strong's Creek capable? Will it determine threshold discharges for Strong's Creek? So even though the basin plan may suggest it can handle up to a certain flow, the channel itself may not be capable of conveying that.
Right.
Okay. So. And that's what part of the objectives of that study would accomplish?
Yes.
Okay.
Does the applicant or their attorney want to ask any questions at this point of the staff presentation? Okay. Let the record reflect that was waived. Do you have anything further to present before we call on the City of Fortuna to make their presentation?
No, sir.
Okay. Could those members who are going to represent the City of Fortuna please step up to the podium?
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Dwayne Riggi. I'm the city manager for the City of Fortuna, and I'm going to be very brief. I want to thank the board for considering our request last June to allow us to come back and have your staff evaluate our request, and I want to thank your staff for taking the time and effort to go through those items, and I, again, want to thank, we're not in a conflict here with either your staff. They're very professional. We've been, I think, well-served as a city, but we have some information we'd like to present to you again this morning. And I'd like to introduce our expert testimony from Dr. Stillwell, who has been here on behalf of the City of Fortuna.
And you were sworn previously.
Excuse me. Yes, I have been sworn.
Yeah.
And I am Dr. Richard E. Stoll, and I appear before you today as an expert witness for the City of Fortuna in this matter. And
does our staff object to his qualification? I know the city presented something that may.
No, I looked at that. And
okay,
we're fine with that.
Proceed then.
Thank you. The As the manager said, we are in support of the order. We think it factually is very close there. We take exception to very few technical details, and other than that, we are requesting that the language more represent the city's intention as a means to try and implement that. And we met earlier today with your staff, and it wasn't in the presentation, but it's my understanding that they are proposing as a late revision additional reopener language, just some of the things that are on our mind. We're going to read some things into the record, but it's my understanding that some of those things staff is requesting as a late revision or no?
We would be open to considering those as a late revision, yes.
Okay. Well, with that, I'll get on with my presentation very briefly, highlighting the high points, and then we'll try to answer any questions you or staff may have. The scope of my testimony in the cities is very simple and straightforward. The draft order appears to dictate a course of action to the city of Fortuna that will result in public expenditures in excess of $12 million in the immediate future, with a total present worth lifecycle cost in excess of $18 million, primarily to build and operate a UV disinfection system to mitigate those disinfection byproducts that Lisa had discussed in her presentation. For this expense, the city, nor I, do not know of any quantifiable benefit provided to public health or the environment. Considering the effluent contains relatively limited amounts of these byproducts, compared to the probable assimilative capacity of Strong's Creek and the Eel River. And therefore, when the city asks its constituency of roughly 3,500 connections, 11,000 people, but 3,500 connections, with a median household income of about $36,000, with 17% of our people being below the poverty line, then if, in fact, we are not successful in demonstrating what we think we can demonstrate as a lawful means to comply and protect the environment, then we're not sure how we'd be asking our people for that money, which would translate into a $26 a month increase on top of the roughly $52 a month we're currently paying. So again, without that reasonable justification for us requesting such a large fee increase from our constituency, we would be concerned that our constituency may reject the fee increase under Proposition 218 and Supreme Court's Bighorn decision, as was done in Dixon, California. So again, as I said, and Duane as well, the city recognizes the Basin Plan, CTR, SIP, the policies involved, and we do not take exception to the draft order in general. The thing that we have found disturbing, and again, we understand that there may be a request of late revision. Certainly, we are requesting that. What we find disturbing about the draft order is that the draft order does not disclose or in any way facilitate the city plans for compliance with the Basin Plan and California Toxics Rule in a manner that may be much more cost-effective than the $18 million default project of converting to UV disinfection and then attempting to build an effluent outfall into the unstable stream bed of the Eel River, which of course is a rapidly eroding watershed. The city's concern is that the draft order at least does not disclose these plans and how they may increase effluent limitations for copper and disinfection byproducts and effluent percentages in the receiving water from those set in the draft order before you right now. Then, regardless of the outcome of the city's plans and studies, the Regional Water Board may reject a subsequent factual request to increase those limits based on a perception of illegal backsliding. And we've chatted again with legal counsel, and her understanding is with ours that if there's new information, then it's not illegal backsliding. But our experience, which is primarily in Region 5, is that we like to get things in the order to make it clear of what the intent of the city and what the intent of the board, pending study results, are in these matters. So, as I say, in the city's opinion, the best way to address future backsliding and backsliding arguments is by disclosing today in simple language what the city is planning to study as a lawful alternative means of compliance with the Basin Plan and California Toxics Rule. And that, in a nutshell, is what we're requesting. Transparency in the order as to what we're planning to do, how those results may increase effluent limits, effluent percentages in the receiving water, the TUC triggers, that sort of thing, and that those increases would not constitute illegal backsliding. That really, in a nutshell, is our order. Lisa correctly addressed our primary concerns, and on copper limits, what she stated was correct. Dr. Robert Emmerich has submitted to the state board and all of the regional boards a protocol that actually, if you believe EPA's model, I mean, I'll condition it on that. If you believe EPA, the protocol is more protective in special conditions, well, in general, and especially in particular conditions, than SIP. And I called Phil Iserina, the chief of the NPDES unit, on Monday just to see exactly where it stood, because we thought he had recommended implementation by all the regional boards, and he said he had not, that he was waiting for additional clarification from Dr. Emmerich. So it still appears that that modified procedure will come to you from the state board, and so again, we're asking for the permit to clearly reflect that in the reopener language. On the mass limits, we'll probably just have to agree to disagree that the design flow, I've included in the package I submitted today to you the design criteria for the wastewater plant and the permit itself, as well as the draft order before you, as well as the design criteria stamped by a licensed engineer who designed the facility, show that the peak flow through the facility is 4 MGD. The planning flow, that which the city uses on planning, is the 1.5, but obviously we all know that the flows go up and down, especially if there's inflow and infiltration. And so we believe, I personally and professionally believe, that the correct mass limit is based on the design flow of that facility hydraulically, which is 4 MGD. Again, it is not a major point. We just like to have permits as factually correct as possible. So on that one, I think we just have to agree to disagree. On the TUC of 1, the thing that is disturbing to us is that there are also acute toxicity criteria. In other words, how you can kill aquatic life immediately. And the current order, I think, correctly states that on every test, the effluent could have only 90% survival of the organisms and not trigger any additional toxicity reduction evaluations. In other words, that's what the criteria set. But on the chronic test, which involves different, more sensitive species, and it covers not only survival but growth and reproduction, if there is any impact whatsoever, we immediately go into this accelerated monitoring. And that monitoring is not inexpensive. And so, again, as Lisa correctly pointed out, that chronic bioassay is based on 3 sensitive species that survive, reproduce, and grow in the wastewater. If there's any impact, the city, under the current TUC of 1, we would immediately go into an accelerated monitoring. And if we were in an effluent-dominated stream or where there's little dilution, then that makes a lot of sense. But here, we're also required to have 100-to-1 dilution. And SIP allows for there to be, it's discretionary, but for there to be some impact in a small, compact mixing zone. And so that, again, we have to go back and explain to our people when we ask for the money what happened and why. And that's what we're having a little difficulty doing. We're in support of the order. I'm just going to, I have them on page 3. They're in bold. And I was chatting with staff earlier before seeing the language that council had shown me just before the hearing began. And I'd like just to read in, and then I'll be done, the reopener language that we crafted based on our experience in Region 5, which this is a completely separate region. You have your own ways of doing business. But we would like reopener language reading something like, on page 4-2.00, the basin plan sets forth criteria that a discharger must satisfy if an effluent discharge is permitted to receive less than 100-to-1 dilution in the Eel River or its tributary. The discharger may elect, as a means of compliance, to conduct the dilution, water quality, and beneficial uses study needed to evaluate whether less than 100-to-1 dilution of the effluent discharges Strong's Creek or the Eel River would satisfy basin plan requirements. When requested, the Regional Water Board will review such studies and, if warranted, may revise this order to make an appropriate increase in the percentage of effluent that may be present in the receiving water. So again, that reopener language, it requires this board to give away nothing. It just clearly says to all what our intents are, and that if we do these studies, you will consider them. It doesn't say you will adopt them. It says you will consider them if appropriate or warranted.
And this is the mixing zone language.
Specifically is about the 1% effluent limit in your basin plan, and then the basin plan sets forth criteria. If you can't meet the 1%, then something less than that's appropriate. The second one is the mixing zone specifically. Okay. Section 1.4.2.2 of SIP requires the dischargers submit receiving water mixing zone studies prior to receiving pollution credits for certain pollutants. The discharger may elect as a means of compliance to conduct mixing zone studies to evaluate any available cumulative capacity in Strongs Creek or the Eel River. When requested, the Regional Water Board will review such studies and, if warranted, may revise this order to make appropriate increases to the effluent limitations and or TUC trigger value. So again, we're just trying to make it clear that under SIP, we are either going to spend $18 million or we are going to demonstrate to you that a mixing zone and dilution credits are appropriate and protective under SIP and your basin plan, and we're just trying to make that as clear in the record as possible for all to know what we're doing and why, and that this approach is acceptable to this board. We are not asking for a guarantee on your response to it, just the procedure. And then finally, the Regional Water Board may reopen this order to revise effluent limitations to be consistent with State Water Board guidance, policies, decisions, or regulations. Again, I think we all know we're human. In my professional opinion, there are errors in SIP. It's what's on the books today. The State Board, including many other parties, are making revisions to it. There's one that's pending. We would like the order to be reopened to reflect that without it being declared illegal backsliding, because again, it would be new information. We're clear. Council and I are in complete agreement. I just like a lot of transparency in my orders, and more or less that I think wraps up our testimony. Thank you.
Okay. Do any board members have questions? Okay. Does staff have questions? Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Mastin?
Could I ask Ms. Bernard or perhaps Mr. Leland, what is the reopen or what's the distinction do you see between the reopener we have and between the one that their witness would like us to consider?
I think that the reopener that they would like us to consider is a lot more specific to why we would reopen the permit. However, in talking with our legal counsel, they've advised us that there is sufficient latitude in the existing reopener language for us to reopen the permit given significant information at any time. I think the true difference would be a level of comfort for the city.
Just a point of Mr. Board Member Anderson.
Our reopener is that on page 19? Is that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And is the city saying the text on page 3 of their handout this morning in bold would replace the text that we have on page 19 in Section C1?
Actually, our reopeners would we envision them in Craftsman as if they'd be in addition. We don't take exception to this. If I might just briefly comment, we have three paragraphs under one, the reopener provisions. The first one is very specific to certain issues contributing to adverse impacts, and our studies would not show adverse impacts, so it doesn't apply. The third one talks about if there's reasonable potential. And our, again, we will not be demonstrating, I don't think, that we have exacerbated reasonable potential, so it wouldn't apply. That left us with the middle one standing. And in our full written comments, which we really didn't have time and I think it was appropriate to write, it's on page 3 of our handout, we comment that draft orders reopener provisions 6C1 is specific to, and I'm quoting what you see before you, the Regional Water Board's interpretation of the narrative toxicity objective in the basin plan, unquote. That reopener is very specific to interpretation of narrative toxicity objectives. And so our further statement on page 3 was, the city is requesting more general reopener language covering matters beyond, quote, interpretations of the narrative toxicity objective, such as effluent dilution studies, which is not a narrative issue. It's in your basin plan. Mixing zones of studies, it's not narrative. It's in SIP. And input from the state board, again, which would not be a narrative. So again, this morning I was shown a late revision from staff that sort of was a synopsis of our three requests. It actually had three bullets, and we certainly would be requesting at the minimum that those late revisions would be made. I mean, this we didn't know about late revisions. These three in bold were our plea, in essence.
Right. Let me. I want to ask legal counsel a question of clarification, because I'm getting a little worried when we're referenced to page 19 and there's a reference to a handout this morning. Have there been revisions on the reopeners that staff wants to put in the hearing record at this time?
Yeah, we, after considering their request, staff and I came up with some language that we considered that would be appropriate. It's more concise and covers the concerns we believe that Fortuna has. And language would just basically say the Regional Water Board may reopen this order and modify water quality effluent limitations for toxic constituents in accordance with 40 CFR 122.62 for the following reasons. The discharger provides new information supporting establishment of a mixing zone. The State Water Board provides new guidance on the calculation of effluent limitations for metals. And the State Water Board revises the policy for implementation of toxic standards for inland surface waters, includes bays and estuaries of California, which is also known as the SIP.
Right. And because of the complexity of the issue, do board members have that? And if not, we need photocopies distributed to us. And if you wouldn't mind, 1 minute, we won't close down the hearing, but just 1 minute for them to go and get appropriate photocopies to us.
Now, I would just, you know, basically like to point out that we don't believe that it's necessary. The reopener provision currently in the permit states that the regional board may modify or revoke and reissue this order if ongoing or future investigations demonstrate that the discharger governed by this order is causing or significantly contributing to adverse impacts to water quality and or beneficial uses of receiving water. Although that's written in such a way, you know, that allows us to tighten it, we also have the ability, well, they actually have the ability to request at any time through the federal regulations a modification to their permit for various reasons, which include changes to their plant, which includes changes in rules or policies. So they do already have this opportunity. For us to put it in the permit doesn't do anything legally. They talk, the consultant Dr. Stoll talks about wanting just transparency because of the concerns of backsliding. And what backsliding is that if you have a stringent permit effluent requirement, you can't make it less stringent unless you come up with certain reasons. There's a certain procedure that you have to follow. One of the exceptions, though, is if there's new information. Having it in the permit saying we'll consider this new information doesn't do anything for them legally. They already have the opportunity to make those modifications. They'll be able to get around the anti-backsliding requirement because it's new information we didn't have previously. So although we don't think it's necessary to add the reopener provision, we're willing to go along with the language that's being provided to you that we came up with this morning.
And what's the applicant's position on that language?
Our position, and we agree with counsel, that it's only for transparency to try and make it as clear as possible as what the city intends to do, that we accept that. We consider this to be, in essence, what we're asking for, just a little more transparency. And as counsel pointed out, it doesn't legally change anything. It's all about public perception, understanding, and where we're going and what we're doing as a city for our people.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Would then the language we've been provided via fourth paragraph of this section?
Right. Yeah, it would just be an add-on.
And the city is okay with that?
Yes.
I mean, in the language, as I stated previously, doesn't give them any rights that they don't already currently have. They currently have the ability through the Code of Federal Regulations to ask for reopener for their permit for these same reasons that we put down here.
Right. Now, I want to say it's a little deeper than new information. It's information which wasn't available at the time of the hearing. And in that sense, I think you have tremendous documentation that wasn't available because everyone's saying it hasn't been studied. So that's very solid. I had one question for legal counsel, and this is more in the area of transparency. 402B, really, which is what we're talking about in the Federal Water Pollution Control Act, it's information which was not available. The Section E, though, has exemptions from the exemption. And one of them, to me, clearly applies to TMDLs, so that's okay. And the exemption to the exemption does still allow it if you can show certain cumulative impacts. That's the only one I have concern is it seems to me other alternative regulations, and that seems to me to be close to narratives, and that seems to me close to the staff finding in C1 paragraph 2. And I just think we need to be clear what the terms and conditions of reopening would be. So I'll sort of refer that to legal counsel, and you may want to if you want to issue an on-the-spot opinion, I'd love it if you want to think about it.
I didn't quite catch your concern, though. It's in regards to the anti-backsliding section.
Yes, we're all anti-backsliding.
That's the new information. That's the exemption from the new information.
Right.
Then alternative grounds for transcendental water quality standards, I thought was the narrative. And
Yeah, I don't think it's applicable, but I'll take a look at it, and I can discuss it with
I mean, it is what it is, but it would, before someone does a study, they better know how to qualify under the regulations, and I would hate for them to stop reading at subsection B in regard to narratives on the anti-backsliding. That's all.
We can discuss it. I think that it's fine.
Yes, I would comment in passing that particularly in Region 2, the exception to the exception comes up time and time again. And it is our concern. The city believes they are simply acting in the best interest of the public. We recognize we have to work within those regulations, and it would be nice if we had all the information available today so that we could address the issue right here and now, but we can't. We still have to live within the regulations. As I say, the reason we even ask for the transparency is because the exception to the exception can be poisoned to where the next thing you know, staff is saying, this is all well and good, but it doesn't comply with the exception section, therefore you've wasted the public's money, at the same time that we're trying to comply with the public trust. So it is a catch-22 that we're aware of.
Okay.
I'd just like to make one point of clarification for the city, that the state implementation plan does supersede the basin plan for mixing zones regarding priority pollutants only. So that does not apply to the chronic or acute toxicity.
Okay, any further questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The concern about accelerated monitoring between one TUC and versus 20 TUC, is that a standard which we are putting in all NPDES permits?
Yes.
So this is not something that we just invented for Fortuna?
No, this is not something we invented
okay.
for Fortuna.
And once that monitoring takes place and we've either determined that there is a problem or that there is a false positive here, we go back to square one and continue monitoring.
Less frequently.
Okay.
I don't recall actually off the top of my head. I think we have to monitor twice during the wet season for chronic toxicity. Unless we go into accelerated monitoring. And when the accelerated monitoring does kick in, if there was toxicity shown and the city was required to do accelerated monitoring, it would only be for the species that showed toxicity. So rather than having to do the three species test again, it would only be for the species that showed toxicity. So hopefully that would only be one species and that would reduce the cost.
I'm not at all insensitive to that coming from Forestville, which is extraordinarily small, and we have the same kinds of monitoring problems, only we have less than 1,000 connections. So, and you get to spend the same kind of money either way. And this isn't something that this is a standard, whether we like it or not. Thank you.
And then I want to ask staff one other question. The city put an interpretation they would have to, unless they can get these exceptions, go to UV disinfection system. Is that staff's interpretation?
No. Actually, okay. There are. It is a possibility for an alternative, but other communities are trying different things in order to meet those criteria.
And in your opinion, are other less costly alternatives available? Probably. I mean, we got to judge on the facts, but okay. Any other board member questions or comments? I have two other speaker slips, or one other from the City of Fortuna. Is there anyone else that wanted to speak? Okay. And you're limited to 3 minutes.
I can do that. Thank you.
Okay.
I just wanted to quickly thank the board and specifically staff for this is probably going to be my last permit. I've worked for the City of Fortuna for 27 years. Of 19, I've been the chief plan operator. And so I'm hoping actually this will be my last permit. But I was kind of thinking, you know, driving down here from Fortuna this morning, like all the people that I'd really like to thank here, staff of the regional board I've worked with over the years, and I don't know if I've got them in the right order or not, but I think I started out with working with Dave Evans and Tom Dunbar. I think he's kind of done a few stints up there. John Hannum, Cecile Bryant, Rick Azevedo, Al Wellman, Terry Dean, Kirsten James, and it's been a pleasure to work with Lisa as well. So I just wanted to say that before you probably don't see me again.
All right, and then just to clarify the record, can we get your name and address? And
George Gerkey, and 3295 Trinity Street, in Fortuna, California.
Thank you. Well, I'll bring it, if there's nothing else, I'm going to close the public hearing, bring it for board deliberations. Okay, we consider the public hearing closed. We're now bringing it up for board deliberations. And perhaps a way to speed it along would be a motion to approve per staff and then start making amendments.
Mr. Chair, I'd give you a motion to approve the permit with the addition of the staff language regarding the reopener that we have seen and that the city, I think, is happy with. And I would give you a motion to accept the permit.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Is there any further discussion at all? Okay, everyone's clear on the motion? I will, I believe, is this a roll call vote for NPDES permit, or is this flat out?
It's a flat out vote.
Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say nay. Abstentions. The motion carries unanimously. I wanted to make a couple comments. One, I really appreciate the efforts of staff and the city. I know a week ago we weren't doing so good on resolving these issues, and I know everybody came together, and I was really very appreciative of that. And two, as I mentioned last time, I'm very appreciative of the city of Fortuna, who's shown great leadership and courage in talking to the voters about the need to do this. And I know it's we have our rules and regulations, but you got to make it work with the folks down home, and they're going, why this, and it's very hard to say, well, that's because the state bureaucracy or the federal bureaucracy or so on and so forth says it. So I really appreciate those efforts. Lastly, to our staff, and I think this is a growing issue, both in the governor's office and Senate rules, are inconsistencies between the regions. And I don't want to delay this permit on that issue, but I think it would be very prudent to have legal counsel approach the other regions, and we have maybe some expertise here on how it's handled. And see whether we can get a common approach between regions, I think would be ideal. And unless there are specific hydrographic characteristics in our region, like some of the dilution mixing zone stuff, because we have more water, sometimes it is different. But what I would like is, out of this hearing, we follow up and attempt to get regional consistency.
In regards to the mixing zone, or?
In regard to reopeners and the anti-backsliding measures.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, could we add to that, just as a request, that this issue of mixing zones also be looked at, because it's one which is not just in Fortuna. It is one which has come up with other municipalities. So somebody needs to give us some guidance on that.
And then you also run into the situation where 98% of the time the regs work pretty well and make sense, and then you got that 2% with extreme dilution or extreme mixing zones where, like on pH or BOD, in those situations, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to treat something that, you know, 5 yards out from the pipe, it's not a problem. So I realize the mixing zone issue is a pretty tough one. But certainly if we're putting... Boy, is this mic going in and out?
No, it's everybody's.
Okay. It's like an exploratorium where they have the microphones that deliberately change so you can't talk. Well, this is... but do follow up, I think, immediately on consistency between regions on the NPDES permit for openers on the anti-backsliding provisions.
Just a point of clarification, Mr. Massey, do you want, when you say guidance on the mixing zones, are you looking for some sort of information from staff on kind of where we are, what other regions are doing, what the main issues are?
I have bumped into this where in Region 1, we have, as I am aware of, we have no mixing zone policy at all. We don't even want to contemplate it. Region 2, which is 15 miles that way, has lots of mixing zone policy. So while the hydrology may be different between Eureka and Imperial, it's not that much different between Petaluma and Santa Rosa. And as a state, I think we need a little bit more consistency between regions.
Well, and if I understand it, though, what we do now is it can be considered on a case-by-case basis, and we don't have a policy.
Yes. Only for toxic pollutants, for the CTR priority pollutants, because the state implementation policy is a statewide policy that then overrides our lack of policy.
Right. I understand within that constraint, but do we want to handle it more generically or do we want to do it case by case? It seems to me we struggle when we handle it case by case, but I might be misinformed. And then lastly, the California Toxics Rule, which we're starting to get into now, is sort of an elephant out there, and I know there's a lot of fear in throughout the municipal and special districts of the Northwest Coast on what's that going to mean, how can people comply with it, how is it understandable, and are we going to have to go to UV disinfection systems and that type of thing. So I think until there's better clarification on how those will sort out, people just need to be sensitive that we're trying to do our best to make it workable within our system. And we're going to see more of this because of the same concerns Fortuna Express.
Mr. Chairman?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Just for your information, on the triennial review list, which will be coming before you soon, and goes out to the public, I believe, tomorrow, the mixing zone policy is listed as an item for us to tackle, and it is above the funding line.
All right. Any further comments or questions? All right.